My name is Anthony Toribio. I'm the Area 1 Commander, and I'm here to present informational report from your police department and the city attorney's office regarding the feasibility of implementing civil gang injunctions in the city of Oakland. I want to start off by saying that utilizing civil gang injunctions are doable, and that it appears to be a good tool for the police department and the community to fight criminal gangs in the city of Oakland. This process involves a collaborative effort between your police department, the city attorney's office, the district attorney's office, and the community. And it is a very labor-intensive effort that has been successful in other law enforcement agencies as far south as Los Angeles and the Los Angeles area, and then as nearby as San Francisco, where they have utilized gang injunctions successfully. In a nutshell, this is how it would work. The police department, in partnership with the city's attorney's office, would gather information meticulously through the review of police reports, by interviewing other police officers, by getting community input, by analyzing and assessing gang graffiti, gang signs, gang clothing, retaliation shootings, and gather all this information to do three things: identify the gang, identify the gang territory, and identify the gang members. Once all that is done, the city attorney would file an injunction with the court, and that would lead to restrictions on identified gang members. And the restrictions would relate to a safety zone, basically the gang members' territory, the gang's area of operation. And the injunctions or restraining orders would prohibit identified gang members from engaging in activity that is conducive to the gangs. What these injunctions would do is that they would disrupt gang activity. It would make it difficult and challenging for gangs and their membership to engage in public nuisance and other criminal activity in the area where they do business. Now, there are opportunities for members that have been identified as gang members to opt out or not be part of that injunction. And the way that has operated in other law enforcement agencies is that they would go to court and try to get out of being part of that injunction. And law enforcement agencies oftentimes would help facilitate that process. And what these persons would do is they would show that they are no longer part of the gang. And they show that by being gainfully employed, by showing that they're going to school, by showing that they haven't been arrested, and through testimonials, credible testimonials from people in the community that they are not involved in that gang activity. Is this the magic bullet or the magic elixir that will help us in this war against gang members and gang activity? I don't think so, but it certainly is one tool that the police department and the community can use to mitigate or reduce the level of gang activity. There are some challenges that other law enforcement agencies have had in implementing these types of injunctions, and they vary from the fact that they're very, very labor intensive, and it requires a lot of research and time to identify the gangs, the members, and their territories. They have initially received resistance from the community that may have seen these injunctions as harming family life, and they have launched campaigns to educate the community on what exactly the gang injunctions do, how they were obtained, and how they work. There has also been challenges by civil liberty groups and organizations, and they have not been very successful in overturning the gang injunctions. So I'm very confident that these gang injunctions are a step in the right direction, and they are and can be an effective tool in reducing crime by creating a hardship, so to speak, on gangs that have terrorized our community.
Thank you, Captain Turbio. Priscilla, is there anything else?
Good afternoon, council members. Good afternoon, Chairperson Larry Reed. It's very good to see you here. I'm here to answer any questions. Pelayo Yamas, who's sitting here and present, can also answer some questions for you. We have done extensive research on this gang injunctions. Frankly, what appeals to us as members and residents of the city is that we're hearing from other jurisdictions that they are indeed helpful. There is a mechanism that seems to indicate that by bringing to the surface those that are indeed preying upon young people and in the youth in this community and trying to bring them into this type of lifestyle and gang activity, it seems to have a deterrent effect. I don't think it's going to be an ultimate solution, but there's a lot of mechanisms that appeal to us. I think the investigative work and the staff-intensive part of it is indeed true. We have been investigating gangs, and the Oakland Police Department has years of extensive research and investigation, but in terms of injunctions, it requires a significant showing, legal showing, before any injunction can be brought and succeed. It does have restrictions, and we're here to answer any questions that you might have generally as to what injunctions do and the elements of injunctions. So we're here and are available to you to answer those questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sarah.
Would you call the public speakers, please?
Uh-huh. Jay Donahue, Michael Shane, Gina Gibran, Manuel L., Wilson Riles, Rashida Grenage, Don Link, Minister Keith Mohammed, Sanji Handa.
Chairperson Reed and council members, I know that this particular item is of particular interest to Councilmember Reed, and to some extent, just like the Pope, you don't challenge someone who's in power on something they want to have. But I would hope that all of you would bring your budget eye to this question, because I think there are some critical issues around this that have not been spoken to. This matter, once you add the analysts, cost is more than $400,000 cost in order to add this particular so-called tool to what the police department has available. If you look at the first city that implemented gang injunctions in Los Angeles, there was a study done called False Premise, False Promise that showed it did not work in Los Angeles. That the work that was done in a particular area, more than anything else, just moved the same criminal activity into another area of the city. There have been many studies which have shown very clearly that the possibility of this being effective in reducing crime is very questionable. If the city, I'm in agreement with Councilmember Reed's goal about trying to reduce crime within the neighborhoods. If you want to do something that is effective, I would ask you to turn towards restorative justice, something that Councilmember Nadell knows about. It is shown that recidivism is cut by using restorative justice under the regular criminal justice program. It goes from 27% with restorative justice to 18%. The satisfaction of the victims of crime increases with restorative justice, and with the little money that the city has, they can join the already moving program in Alameda County to bring about restorative justice. When it was done in Australia, it reduced juvenile crime by 80%. Thank you, Mr. Warren.
Hi, my name is Jay Donahue, and I'm with Critical Resistance. And I want to point out just two things about gang injunctions. One is that largely you're going to be targeting communities of color. You're going to be increasing harassment of youth and racial profiling. And I don't think that's something the city of Oakland wants to do. And two, I want to point out that I think if you went around and asked community members, which it sounds like maybe you are going to do, or the police department is going to do, you're going to find that community members are going to ask for things that are going to actually make their community safer, which does not include putting more cops on the streets. It means giving people jobs. It means giving people health care and giving people access to safe and affordable housing. That's what real safety means in Oakland.
Thank you.
Good evening, my name is Shane, and I do volunteer work for a group called Oakland Cop Watch, and I'm completely against this type of reactionary, these types of reactionary injunctions. They do nothing to get at the heart, the real crux of the problems in poor and working class communities, which are lack of jobs and lack of relevant school curriculum. They do nothing to address the intense dropout rates that Oakland Public Schools are facing at the current time. And as a teacher, I have heard from colleagues that these dropout rates only continue to get worse and worse. Not to mention that knowing a little bit about the numbers of officer-involved shootings from 2004 to 2008, coming from certain perspectives, one might say that the most violent gang in Oakland is the Oakland Police Department.
Yeah.
So I don't think these types of injunctions really, they're definitely not going to, like I said, get at the heart of the problem, which is the lack of jobs for minority communities, Latino, Black communities. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Don Link. I'm the chair of the Shattuck B-11 NCPC. I'm here to speak in favor of this proposal. North Oakland is usually thought of as safe, but I can count 12 people who have died in gang violence in North Oakland and South Berkeley in the last 5 years. The most notorious one was that chase from West Oakland that ended up in a car crash at MLK and Eileen Street, killing two innocent people. It's one of the things about the gang thing. One of the goals is to keep the people involved in gangs alive. And if they're on the street chasing each other and shooting each other, that's not going to happen. The other is to protect the innocent citizens that get caught in the crossfire. The two people that died on MLK were completely innocent. One was a pedestrian on the sidewalk. The other one was in a car, and had just come from the North Oakland Senior Center where he was doing work on a video. Normal efforts that we've used to date have not stopped this kind of violence. I think we need this tool, and with this new chief who has used it in Long Beach, I think we ought to give it to him. Gang injunctions have worked in these other cities that have used them. Continuing to do what we've been doing until now is not going to produce different results. And if Oakland citizens are disturbed by the deadly violence in the city's streets, this offers a tool to deal with it and to eliminate at least one form of that violence that has produced so many deaths of both the players and innocent citizens alike. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Manuela Fontaine, and I'm with All of Us and None. And I'm not going to speak from a residential perspective. I'm going to speak from my own perspective. As considered by law enforcement, many in elected positions as a gang member, what I consider an informal street organizer because I was misguided at the time, I went to state prison, and many people in this room have not been there. And I say that to say this. When people like me go to state prison who were not really involved in gangs the way, I might have been peripherally involved through family context, but you get involved in a criminogenic environment, it makes you become a gang member. It makes you become something that you were not because you're forced to survive. And many people in the 6 years that I spent in prison who I knew were not involved because of the way that many people, gang members, came in and revealed themselves, they became susceptible to becoming gang members, people they weren't. Theoretically, it looks good in paper. In fact, for many people, if the numbers go down, you get elected or you get a position higher than what you're already doing. But practically, it doesn't work. example is, if you guys have the time tonight, whenever, look at Alex Sanchez, Google him. Now, Alex Sanchez is a national revered gang member turned peacemaker. He got arrested on June 24th, last year. He got recently released last Thursday because they didn't want to release him because they considered him a threat to society. Nevertheless, the community came up with over $2.4 million in property to get him out because they believed in him. But that took over 7 months to happen. So in order for us to really help out the community, like many of the speakers that came before me, we need to find equitable, sustainable, and racially neutral measures. Finally, rather than a legitimate crime-fighting tool that this has considered to become, the stopping of people perceived to be in gang, it's very despicable, racially oriented tool of harassment. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms.
Chairman Lee, Rashida Grenage for Pueblo. The first thing, of course, is the financial. On pages 1 and 2, the costs are outlined for you. It's almost a third of $1 million. And that doesn't even address the potential lawsuits that will come out of the abuse of this policy, which has been the case everywhere it's been implemented. So I think you can count on, you guys, some of you heard risk management report earlier today. Last year you paid out $6 million in lawsuits. I think you can count on that going up if you implement this. The Department of Justice authorized this research on San Bernardino community where the gang injunction tactic was implemented. And they reported, and this is online, I got it offline, you can get it likewise, just Google LA gang injunction. It suggests that in the short term, the areas, so-called safety areas, where the injunction has been applied, the residents, as you might expect, feel safer and feel as though there's a protection there and feel as though there's less quality of life impacts and so on. But that's a short-term benefit. Long-term, it is far less sustainable in terms of its desired effect. Finally, they say, and I'm quoting, the positive effects of injunctions might be expanded if this strategy was coupled with the provision of skill development and treatment resources for targeted gang members. The serving of injunction papers may open a window of opportunity for change, offering a carrot and a positive opportunity for vocational, educational, or personal growth. So they're saying, if in order for this to really have any profound impact at all, it should be coupled with helping folks get out of that life and offering them a positive alternative. I think if you're going to consider anything like this, and frankly, I hope you don't, but at the very least, it should be balanced with that type of a Measure Y violence prevention approach to offering support for people and not just incarceration and penalties that further, as you heard, further stigmatize these people. But all in all, I think far more of a downside than an upside, and certainly going to polarize the community in ways that we certainly are not going to benefit from. Thank you.
I disagree with you on polarizing the community, Rashida.
I know you do. That's why I'm here.
Well, I know that's why you're here. Yes, Mr. Keith.
Yes, good evening to all of you, Chairman Reed. Upon hearing for the first time on the news that Oakland was considering a gang injunction, of course, I leaped out in concern right away. Some might recall a couple of years ago that the city of Oakland, along with 15 other police agencies, organized in part by Attorney General Brown, conducted a raid in the Acorn community that led to the arrest of some 50 plus young men that the Attorney General identified in a press conference as terrorists involved in asymmetrical warfare. We were gravely concerned with the language being used to describe these young people, because when people are identified by these kinds of terminologies, then the criminalization and the demonization of them becomes such that it then justifies the excessive use of force, the unnecessary use of arrest, the unnecessary call for harassment of those that are attempting to live their lives in whatever fashion there is there. Before Operation Acorn, Oakland was never known for gangs. Since Operation Nutcracker, pardon me, since Operation Nutcracker, the Discovery Channel has come to the city, done a show declaring that there were 10,000 gang members here, and shortly thereafter, we now are looking at a call for injunction. Just listen to the words of those experts who spoke just a few moments ago. One said, "I don't think that this is a magical tool for resolving the gang problem." The other said, "I don't think that this is the ultimate solution." Then if this is not the magic tool, and if this is not the ultimate solution, then we should, as policymakers, be seeking what is the tool and what is the solution that can actually bear witness to the problem. Finally, Senator Rod Wright out of Los Angeles, whose district is known for Bloods, Crips, Nortenials, and Perennials, has vehemently opposed gang injunctions and is right now seeking to modify through state legislation the way that they occur, because many young people, for growing up in neighborhoods like the young brother said just a few moments ago, are identified by police officers as gang members, which apparently in most cases is the only or the main identifier of who is a gang member. Well, what Senator Wright's concern was and is that once a young person's name is listed as a gang member, that it's almost criminal of anybody to ask that somebody to stand up in a public forum and quote, as I read here, repudiate the gang. Well, that's worse than wearing a snitch jacket.
With all due respect, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
I will wrap up. That's worse than wearing a snitch jacket. So some of the requirements that are required to relieve oneself of, quote, a gang label, such as employment in a city of great unemployment, being in school in a city of many dropouts, and testimonials as to what my character change has been, you don't find that requirement laid on anybody else anywhere else. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, I'm Sanjeev Panda, East Bay News Service. First and foremost, not only San Francisco, but also Los Angeles, and the former city attorney, Rocky Delgadillo, had considerable experience with gang injunctions. And it would be interesting to also look at the pros and cons of what happened in Los Angeles. Now, it's an interesting thing. When you look at the Port of Oakland and you look at the Oakland Police Department, there's one glaring similarity. And that is that there are many, many good people in both organizations, but both the Port and the OPD are literally in turmoil because collectively most people cannot seem to come up with solutions or deliverables. The Port, it's just three or four people out of 450 have run it into the ground. OPD, the numbers are bigger. And there's also an issue both with the civilian aspect of the population that worked there, the non-sworn employees, and of course we have the Ryder settlement. I remind you, this city, and you as a city council in closed session, voted to enter into the negotiated settlement agreement because you did not want to risk, you feared the federal government coming in and basically taking over the Oakland Police Department. Keep in mind the closed session memo, which should still be readily accessible through the city attorney's office. If not, I have copies I can share with you that detailed your strategy at length. And unfortunately, it's now been many years beyond what was supposed to be the period for reform. And the taxpayers keep picking up the tab. You just approved a contract for another two-year extension for another $1.25 million or so on the negotiated settlement agreement. So one of the things that has to be paramount if you choose this course of action is training. Sensitivity training, training in terms of how to deal with people. You can't have, like the officer a few weeks ago I gave you a great example of, when he was flagged down by a woman on Piedmont Avenue, somebody parked in the red zone, said, "Do you want me to ignore the burglary call on mine?" She had no way knowing that. He was stopped at a red light and didn't seem to be in a hurry, didn't have his red lights on. I could give you lots of examples like that. But as I said, open forum, I will finish up with a great example that will tie all this together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Honda. All right. Other questions from members of the committee? This is an informational report. Ms. Cunningham.
Yeah.
Thank you. So this is informational in what sense? That you're doing it anyway and you're letting us know? I didn't mean to be flip, but I thought it was a... Are you asking us for authorization for extra money or what is it? What sort of posture is this?
Well, certainly we'd like some funding to be able to do this because it is something that's very labor intensive to do. We are looking at utilizing these injunctions in the future. I'd really not rather get into the specifics of that right now. But originally when this report was requested, it was to provide information on if this could be done in the city of Oakland.
Right. That's after hearing what San Francisco was doing, that's, I asked the city attorney office and OPD if they would prepare a report, talk about how it would could be implemented here in the city of Oakland.
So, well, I'm open to learning more. I have a number of questions about both the results that have happened in other cities, and if there are positive results, I'd like to hear about them, and if there are failures also, I'd like to hear about those. I am concerned about the resources, and the reality is you're not going to get extra resources. I mean, we don't have them, so I think it's really a question of, is this the priority of the police department and how to use the staffing that it has? So if you use an officer devoted to this, it means that they're coming out of, you know, some other duty that they were already doing, is what I assume, given the very difficult financial straits we're in. And also, so, Chairperson Reed, is this more you who's bringing this forward and not Chief Batts, or, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering, is this something that Chief Batts did in Long Beach and found to be very successful and he really wants to do it, or are we just kind of looking at it, or like kind of...
No, it's something certainly I would hope that we would implement, given the gravity of the issues that the city is confronted with, whether it's gangs in North Oakland, whether it's gangs in East Oakland, whether it's gangs in Central East Oakland. I mean, Rasil can tell you where this injunction has made a difference. And, you know, I listened to folks talk this evening, and I mean, this is a city that should be extremely outraged by the number of loss of lives that we lose on the streets that are gang-related, and the violence that is associated with those gangs that are out, whether it's out of my district, whether it's the Border Brothers and the Tainers or the Serenios out in East Oakland, shooting up each other, killing innocent victims, or whether it's over in West Oakland or whether it's over in North Oakland. I mean, this city should be incensed. I mean, and I hear folks say, do nothing. We didn't want to pass the curfew ordinance to address the issues of young people that are out on the streets late at night, getting in insane activities. So, I mean, for me, if folks don't want to make this city a safer and a better place for us families to live in, we don't need to do anything. We don't even need to have a police department. We can let people just run wild and just strap on guns and walk around and kill each other. If that's what folks want this city to be like, hey, so be it. I mean, all I can do is raise the issue and then leave it up to my colleagues to decide how they want the quality of life for the city to be. So it's just very frustrating to me.
Well, I'm not saying no, but I'm saying I want to learn more. I absolutely agree that the level of violence and gang-related violence is severe. It's completely ruining the quality of life in many neighborhoods, and we do need to do things differently. But I want to make sure. Well, I would like to see this sort of in the context of Chief Batts' strategic plan, because I know he has some new ideas about what to do about gang activity, and this either could be part of that or not part of that. But I will say I am not
convinced that this program would criminalize young men of color. I think there are some characteristics of this about, you know, really identifying who is involved with the gang. It's not just, you know, pulling over any kid on a street corner. So, Larry, that's not my concern as much as wanting to know that this use of resources would really get the job done and not just sort of, you know, move it to a different neighborhood. And I'm open to learning more and learning if, you know, if it could achieve the desired result. It's just, so.
No, I understand. Yeah. Ms. Nagel.
Thank you. I too am seeking solutions. I think that everyone is outraged at the violence in the community. It's just that if there was an immediate silver bullet, as Captain Trivia said, we would all jump on it, but even he is not convinced that this is that. We just want to make sure that what we choose is not going to be more harmful than good. And my concern, I thought I had asked it more clearly when we were considering this, to have in the report a clear understanding about whether the injunction in San Francisco had pushed people over here, because that's what I had heard, because we certainly had a little blip, an increase in gang activity in Oakland, I think, since San Francisco did theirs, and there was some discussion about some new gang members in West Oakland that might be coming from San Francisco. So that's one of the things that I want to get a better handle on. The other concern that I have, been, you know, certainly the Latino gangs identify themselves more overtly with uniforms or colors or whatever. Most of our African American groups don't identify that way. Aside from everybody wearing a hoodie and sagging pants, you don't, you know, there's no way to distinguish one group who's against the other. And so how you identify people in a group is going to be very complicated, and I just don't know if it's as easy as if, you know, in a situation where you have gangs that identify themselves more blatantly. So those are some of my concerns.
Can I ask Captain Trivia to respond to the latter part of what Ms. Nail raised?
About the colors and whatnot? Right. It is not only clothing. It's beyond that. It involves identifying members who have been arrested and convicted for gang-related activity, and it has to do with looking at the big picture as opposed to one specific part of what gangs usually do and how they display themselves. And that includes graffiti, it includes clothing, it includes tattoos, it includes gang members who admit that they are gang members. It goes to, as I mentioned earlier, the pattern of retaliatory shootings. It goes to vandalism, drug dealing, the harassment of citizens in gang territories. And it's very thorough and comprehensive, and the burden of proof isn't the preponderance of evidence or 51% that this person is a gang member. It has to be clear and convincing. And the workup that these other agencies have done to identify the gang, identify their territory, and identify the members is huge. It is and meets that clear and convincing standard. So it's not capricious or arbitrary. It's not an officer that may not like someone or one police report that does this. It is a combination of a lot of things. Police reports, interviews with officers, an assessment of gang activity, their hand signals, their clothing, arrest history, and those other things that I had mentioned.
No, that was he responded to that question. I still feel like I recognize that it involves all those other things. What my point was is it's harder to get that information. But
yeah.
Hear from my other colleague.
Madam Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I've had a similar in the middle here. We do right now injunctions against some people who have records and who repeatedly come back, let's say in my district, into some commercial areas. So I'm not against injunctions de facto. We get injunctions against people under our ordinance who are selling drugs and come to certain apartments. So I don't think that's the issue, and I don't think that's what's making us hesitate, Chairman Reed. I think what we're I'm concerned, people raised two issues. One, the monetary issue, why we have to have a separate group. So, Captain Trivio, I hear three issues. One is why we couldn't use some of the attorneys that we just funded, Mr. Russo, to work with this. They already have paralegals and legals, and to have that be a task. We have two groups with the Neighborhood Law Corps, and we have the additional people who are supposed to work on quality of life things. A lot of the things that you originally get gains on would fit into those categories, and why we couldn't do that on a more coordinated basis with the current resources. Secondly, I think people are raising probably the civil liberties issues, and also just whether you would. I mean, what I feel enough is that we don't have, when I started as a school board member in 1990, there were a lot of very formal gangs, the Bloods, the Crips, et cetera, and a lot. Now we have a lot of groups of young people who are not necessarily informal gangs, and quite frankly, I've tried to use injunctions against those groups too in a certain neighborhood, and they're not a part of a gang, but they are kids who have busted repeatedly into cars or mugged people in that neighborhood, and we try to get injunctions so that they're not real comfortable hanging out in certain neighborhoods, mm-hmm. that we're trying to get more shopping in and make the neighborhoods feel safe and make sure, frankly, senior women can go shopping and not get mugged on their way home. And so we've used that. And so I have a little concern about the budget. I have a little concern about whether or not the gang is, on one hand, too broad or too restrictive in terms of using this particular technique. And I do think that I've been reading a lot about the LA situation. They have a lot more formal gangs than we have, and it has not been necessarily that rosy, either by community groups or even within the police department. Some of the reports of what's happened in LA. I mean, it's one thing to do something that's very specific against one gang that's from Oakland in San Francisco 2 years ago, but if we broaden this and made it an ongoing policy, what I'm uncomfortable is that I'd like to see some of our other gang task force people. I'd like to have a discussion about this. I'd like not to discuss this separately. I like the discussion in terms of whether it would really work. And right now, the most formal gangs in town are almost all Latino. So I'm worried about that. So I guess my question is formal versus informal, why we couldn't use other resources not to do this. And I'll end with this. In the law district, we try to get injunctions, try to get some people to put forward injunctions, and we did get one. But nothing was quite as successful as us just sort of getting in the face of about 18 kids who hung between the arches on a regular basis, getting in their face, taking over their corner one day with sort of a speed dating thing with some employers, and then constantly working with them to get them off that street. And so I get what people are saying is that just the police alone and getting the injunctions alone were not as effective as also combining it with job training opportunities and just having somebody constantly working. So Michael Johnson used to work for me. This was his Thursday afternoon task once or twice a month, was to check in on the 18 guys that we knew, get them to meet him at the coffee shop, try to work with applications, and we got Target, Federal Express, UPS, Community College, the Summers Youth Program. We got different people to come down and do sort of a speed dating thing with some of these young people. Pretty much we're down to three. Of the 18, only three of them are still hanging out on the street. And they weren't a gang, but they certainly were creating a lot of havoc in our district, and they wouldn't have necessarily fit your gang criteria. And so it seems like a lot of money for something that's very targeted that I'm not sure that would work, and that whether or not I couldn't do that with either existing staff or existing strategies. But I'm not against injunctions per se. I think we should use them more. has a lot of comments. Do you have a reaction to my question about being worried about it not being either too wide or too broad of a definition?
My response is this. To identify a gang and its members and its territory, it's very specific. And the focus is very narrow. For example, to identify someone that is a gang member, there are 11 factors that the law enforcement community uses statewide to identify gang members. And that's admission to a gang, they've committed a crime related to gang activity and furthering the gang enterprise. The person is shown through tattoos, clothing, gang signs, frequenting gang areas, associating with known gang members, being registered as a gang member under a penal code section, or even admitting to a police officer that they are a gang member. So when these other law enforcement agencies have identified gangs, their memberships and their territories, they've done a lot of homework. And as I said earlier, they have clear and convincing evidence that this is a gang. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Not really. I mean, we are doing some of that work. We have identified some gangs in Oakland. I'm not sure. I guess my worry was there are a few gangs that you mentioned in the report, the Norteños, the Sereños. I'm guessing you have the Border Brothers, and there are a couple of subgroups of that identified by streets in their graffiti anyhow. So if this money miraculously appeared tomorrow, would you just be focusing on them?
We would,
because they're the more formal gangs. There are a lot of groups of young people in the city are committing crimes that aren't formal gangs.
Right. This is how I believe we would determine on what gangs to focus on. First, we would identify the most violent gangs. Secondly, we would look for gangs that we have intelligence on or information on where we know or would be able to identify the gang, their membership, and their territory. And I think those are the two important factors that would lead us into the direction on which gang to choose. Which gang is the most violent, and which gang at the moment that we had enough intelligence that we could move forward on.
Lucille?
What I wanted to add is that indeed there is a lot of investigative work that goes into it. For purposes of my office and the resources that go into this, we do utilize, as I indicated, the unit that we have, Mr. Pelayo Llamas. We also rely on the specific city prosecutor that is working in that area. We attend NCPC meetings, we work with the investigative gang unit, and when they ask us to pursue an injunction, we have to feel convinced that indeed we meet the legal elements of what a gang is. And if you think of it this way, it may be helpful as well for the community. We look at patterns of misbehavior and patterns of criminal activity. Not one isolated incident here, not another one here. It's the pattern and who is involved in that pattern of criminal behavior. As the city continues to face budget cuts, as we try to be concerned about using police resources more meaningfully, I think that's where we have to go. I know there are concerns, and they're legitimate. We have met with the ACLU. We have met with the Lawyer Committee for Civil Rights. We're discussing with them parameters and limits and what to put in those restrictions as they relate to injunctions. I am equally concerned about racial profiling, but this type of case, when you look at the list of actors or persons that are involved and against whom we're seeking injunctions, we have to go to court with criminal records here. These are not isolated incidents of misbehavior. These are individuals that have criminal records and prey on young people, are trying to recruit young people. Those people that we all equally have concerns for, those are the kinds of people that I think this can provide some remedies. It's not a final solution. It's not an ultimate goal. But I think if we continue to be strategic, if we continue to work collectively, all of us, and come together to try to see what kind of solution we can provide. This has provided a level of solution and a level of remedy. I think it does it in a way that we'll see how it plays out in Oakland. What we hear from Los Angeles, and Pelayo, please add any information that you have, is that as it relates to some of the gangs, it disrupted that behavior. It disrupted the pattern of criminal activity to such an extent that people had to take back. People had to slow down. People realized that they were being exposed to the community, that they were being identified. The injunction doesn't put people in jail. Indeed, I hope that's not the case. But if you continue to engage in that pattern of criminal behavior, this city has to stand strong. All of us, whether we are on one side or the other, have to come together and hold people accountable. This is a mechanism that allows you to do that. Our responsibility as your attorneys is to make sure that all the elements of the case are met. And that's what we ask OPD. We have reviewed hundreds and hundreds of police reports. We have to look for that pattern of misbehavior and criminal conduct in gang activity. If we're not seeing it, we won't file that case. We can come to you and we can go to the chief and say we don't meet the elements of the case. Pelayo, you can relate to the council some of the good outcomes in terms of other cities pursuing this injunction. I would appreciate it.
Well, I shared some of the statistics with Captain Trivia this morning, but I scanned a report from the San Francisco City Attorney's Office. They have, I believe, 5 injunctions, and they showed a pattern over a 3-year period, because they only started these fairly recently. One statistic was the number of people served with an injunction and the number of people that had violated them. And it showed a trend where the violations were decreasing. So people were obeying these injunctions now more and more. And the main point of the injunction is to keep the gang members from associating with each other on the street. They're less likely to commit crimes that affect the community. They're less likely to be targeted by their rival gangs, which always result in bystanders being hit or killed by bullets. And it gives the community a lot of relief from the constant presence, the drug dealing, the intimidation, from the physical occupation of a zone. Ms. Kwan, I think one of the questions you were asking I'd like to address a little bit was your questions about formal or informal gangs and their structures. I'm not sure if you were saying that you're afraid the informal gangs might not be addressed, or that...
I guess what I'm actually saying this is that I'm open to seeing how we could use this. I'm not sure if you need more. I know you would like to have more money, but I've seen us use this kind of technique without calling it this project and not that narrowly defined to gangs. Because I was saying, in my own district, we have gone after injunctions for some young people that are involved in crime in a certain commercial area. We have done that also around drug houses. Many of us, council members, have done injunctions around drug houses and other properties over the years. So I'm not disagreeing that it might not be an effective technique and that we might not have done that. What I am worried about, and I know the police department is very good in putting forward proposals for things, but it's a tough budget year. So it's a combination of, I'd like to see us maybe use this in certain areas with our existing resources and see if it really works or not, and being really very, very careful about the profiling, et cetera, because I think we've done it in the past. You don't have to have $300,000 or $400,000 and give it a name to try this in some areas. I get it if you're going to try to do all the gangs, try to do them all at once, that you might want to do that. But then I think that leads a different discussion. I think that I'd like to actually hear from the chief what the plan is. I'd like to see where the prevention people fit into this. I'd like to discuss it comprehensively rather than if this is coming to us as sort of a standalone funding project. Now I'm trying to figure out how it fits in with your DAs and what we're currently doing when we do injunctions, how it fits in with the overall budget, and how it fits into even a lot of the restorative justice and the neighborhood and youth outreach job programs that we're doing now, because I don't think any project stands alone when you're trying to get gangs out of a neighborhood or you're trying to turn young people around, because I tell the story about Michael Johnson's work in the Laurel because it's 15 kids who are permanently either back in school and jobs. And it didn't take that much effort for my office to do that. A couple hours a week of dedicated time and getting to know those kids. And that combination with also the push of the beat officer and the push from the threat of getting injunctions worked together to do that. And I think either of them alone wouldn't have been as effective.
Yeah, I would add that these gang injunctions are not a standalone. I mean, they're part of a plan. And the police departments work with gang members. On one end, you know, we utilize Measure Y street outreach workers, you know, to reach out to gang members. We have a call-in program where we invite gang members to meet with the law enforcement community to include the police department, the DA, the U.S. attorney, as well as other community members and Measure Y resources for jobs, training, and whatnot. So, you know, I see these injunctions as part of a plan, a tool that we can use to help us in our struggles against criminal gangs.
All right. Thank you, Captain. Lucille, thank you. Brian, thank you.
Two things actually. One is, in San Francisco, have they seen? I appreciate that they are not seeing the same people in the geographic area of concern. Are they seeing? Do they identify the people by name so that they know whether or not they're also committing crimes, but just in another area?
Yes, they do keep track of people specifically by name. There's a couple factors on the concern about pushing crime elsewhere. Some of them are geographic borders, such as there's a freeway or a large street where people just don't cross because it's not conducive to wherever their activity is. Another reality is that there are bordering gangs who are their rivals, so they can't easily move to other places. I don't have any specific statistics to tell you about repeat or crimes outside of the safety zone. What I did cite to you was that there are fewer and fewer violators of the injunction, so that people are staying out of the safety zone or not committing crimes in the safety zone, according to San Francisco's trend.
I think what we're really trying to do is to see whether we can change those people's behavior, not just where they behave badly. Some of the points about having restorative justice or what Jean is saying, the wraparound services part is really key. Because if you think about why people join gangs, it's because they are feeling disenfranchised, they don't have self-esteem, they get drawn into something where people are recognizing them, giving them false brotherhood kind of a sense. What we want to do is to give them a real sense of community and brotherhood and self-esteem and not abuse them and force them into illegal activity on a twisted basis like that. So how do we do that? You know, the restorative justice process is working. It's also resource intensive though, and it requires dollars too. I mean, you need if you're going to take a person, just as Michael did, take these youngsters and see what kind of services they need, and probably many of our gang members are further along in terms of antisocial behavior than the youth that you're talking about, Gene. So they require a lot more involvement and mentorship and you know something to get them into a job or education or whatever, and that requires some focus and work as well. And resources. The practitioner in restorative justice process is working very hard to pull those people together and to surround them with something that's a lot more positive in their lives. So if we are going to do something like that, that is the carrot and stick approach, I think we have to think about the resources for the carrot part as well. And I recognize the value of disrupting bad behavior, but then if we want to steer them in a healthy direction, we have to have the resources to do that. And I that's not in this, and we are actually losing resources.
That's why
I want to see it together, but we need to look at it. We need to look at the resources for both parts of it, otherwise it won't work.
That's why there's Measure Y. That's why Measure Y exists.
Yeah, but
fund all these different social service programs.
More money for the restorative justice practitioners. But they've run out of money, so the process is ended.
I just wanted to say I would agree that we have provided a briefing to the mayor's office, and certainly I personally feel very strong and committed to the idea that we do need to provide both parts of it. I think you're going to see in this gang injunction proceedings that you know, that those that are being targeted are those that are indeed preying on other young people and trying to bring them into that lifestyle. But then we also, as a city, think we have a great opportunity to come in and provide those resources so we can provide the element of support that some of the community members have expressed and you all have expressed. So we're prepared to pursue that, and thank you.
All right, Ms. Kinnear.
I think we want to keep, at least I would like to see this proposal stay alive, and but I would like to see it in the context of the overall strategic plan, mainly for the resource issue. I mean, it's just, it's a question of, you know, how do we use our precious police resources? So that would be my proposal. So I'm still very open to it, but I'd like to see it in the, have us look at it in the context of whatever else the new police chief is proposing.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Ladies and gentlemen. All right.
What's the status of this report?
This is an informational report.
We're going to receive and file it?
Yes.
Can I have a motion to receive and file it?
Moved by Ms. Carnahan, second by Ms. Lee.
Thank you. Item 3 is received and filed for the record.